Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Caroline, Willie, Dee Mays, Mike Vrabel's up at the podium, so we'll send it over to him now.
Again, with all due respect to our season and to the Jacksonville Jaguars and to our, you know, just the season. You know, just the reflection and the improvement, and it hasn't been there for any of us. And not enough of it. And whether that be me, the coaching staff, the players, I mean, I think we just have to continue to strive to improve and clean up the things that, you know, we see that can affect whether we win or lose. And so that's what we're going to try to do this week. And then we'll be able to, you know, touch on where, you know, we feel like we're going to go after that.
It seemed like progress was being made in terms of pass protection in the middle of the season. Then the last 3 weeks, the sacks have become a problem again. Is there anything that you can pinpoint that's created some of that?
I mean, I think sometimes matchups in this league and, you know, again, our ability to be able to stay out of games that turn into a dropback mode. You guys all scoff at me when I say that, and we have to stay out of those games. We have to stay complementary, right, to where you can run the football, you can move the pocket, you can run – keepers, you can run play action where guys are creating different angles as opposed to sitting there in a two-minute situation and having to go on the ball and drop back and throw it and score and be down in those situations. That's not where we need to be. And that's all of our faults for putting ourselves in that position. So, you know, there's good looks at it, and then there's, you know, obviously, you know, some disappointing snaps as it relates to protection, and everybody can help.
You talk about the good looks at it. Kind of, isn't it a little bit like the airport, like the planes are supposed to land safely, and when they do, it's not the thing that you get excited about. It's when there's a crash that it's news. Like, The plays where they block effectively is what they're supposed to do. Do you spend a lot of time on the plays where they block correctly, giving them credit for it, or is it about the ones where they don't?
I think it's a balance. I think you have to continue to show, and I appreciate such a very wordy, long, drawn-out question. You know, there's a balance to coaching and to be able to show the good plays that have shown improvement or things that you worked. I guess the biggest thing is showing everybody or each player or each unit something that you've worked on that you know, you get in the game and you're able to nail it. And you're like, okay, you put time in on it. This is something that we focused on and worked on. And then obviously there's, you know, the technique plays or, you know, the negative plays that we show as well. and that we have to try to avoid. That's why we have to practice. And, you know, so you know, I'm not trying to sit here and, you know, have a pizza party over the, you know, the positive plays, but there are some things that you're working on and that you end up, you know, getting in the game that are positive, and then it's part of development and improvement. Is some small victories along the way. You know, we know that the only victory that matters is the football game. But individually, I think that there can be, you know, some small victories as you try to, you know, develop players on your roster.
You know that change is inevitable. You've lived through it in this game. Is there any time for sentimental thoughts this week that this could be your last game with 22 in the backfield?
No, I think we all will have time to sort some of those things out. You know, after the season, you know, we're all disappointed and, you know, and frustrated by how this went this year. But, you know, we're just trying to make sure that it's as professional and as classy as we finish, and then we put the players in the best, you know, position to go out there and again, win. But then also, you know, there's still, you know, a lot of guys that are playing for personal accolades as well. And I'm absolutely okay with that, because we've always said that when you get enough guys that have personal success within what we're trying to do as a team, you know, we're going to have, you know, plenty of team success. So those things have to coexist, and I want them to one more week.
Do you feel like the message that you and the coaching staff try to send to the team, you feel like that's still being received the same way now as it was when this team was having success in years past?
The message, you know, really is try to stay consistent. I think that, you know, whether there's things that we believe in, and there's things that we know, you know, win football games, and that is clean football and winning football and successful football. So when we don't do those things, like, you know, that's not getting, you know, I mean, we're not doing a good enough job of getting, you know, that coached or taught with whatever turnover there may be or may not have been. You know, so yeah, I mean, it all falls on me. I'm good with that.
You started Dillard three times to pull him. Is it the lack of alternatives that gets him back into the position?
Well, we only have so many offensive linemen, and, you know, there was, you know, but there was also, you know, trying to get, you know, Jalen some work as well, you know, and that's, you know, that's what you work with here in the season with who you have.
Do you stress at all that this is a big game? I mean, this is potentially a playoff game for Jackson.
Yeah, every game is a big game. You know what I mean? And they, you know, a year ago we were in that opportunity, we were in that spot, and, you know, we weren't able to win. And, you know, we need to win for a lot of reasons.
Have you seen progress from Jalen, you know, in the stats and the starts that he's got?
You know, most importantly, it's what we're going to get this week. And again, everybody's ready to. You know, I'm just not ready to sit here and write a, you know, in a review, and it shouldn't be very good. So again, we're focused on what he's going to be able to do this week, and how he can play this week, and how he can find a way to help us win.
Do you potentially look at guys like Murphy or Gibson, maybe some guys that hadn't played a lot this year in the final game, or what's the balance like? And curious about some players, but also want to let your veterans finish.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be as respectful as I possibly can. I think I'd be doing those guys a disservice and not adhering to the trust that I've tried to build with those players at that position that you're talking about. It's been one of the strongest positions on our football team. It's the one that's maintained and helped us, you know, consistently. And, you know, by that I mean just being there day in and day out. We know how much Danico and Harold, and then with the addition of Arden this year, That would be difficult, and I know that those guys, they want to play. They want to play well, and I want them all to get, you know, as many damn sacks as they possibly can and tip as many passes and make as many plays as they possibly can. And so Caleb has to earn a right to play. He made a couple tackles on special teams, didn't follow that up. So, you know, we'll see how he does this week, and then we'll see how the game goes.
Mike, with the Jaguars quarterback situation, how do you prepare potentially, you know, maybe having played more than one quarterback or maybe someone who you wouldn't normally see?
I think that's always probably delicate. I mean, we see the similar plays. You know, there may not be as much, movement plays or mobility. But I think as a whole, the plays and that you're trying to prepare and show the players to are going to be the same types of plays. And then once you figure out who the quarterback is, maybe one scrambles a little bit more, one's, you know, more in a pocket, and you'll have to adjust to that and say, hey, we got a threat for, you know, a more mobile quarterback and how that all plays out.
Finished the last game, Mike, with one tight end, healthy, active. Will some of those guys be able to play this week, or are you going to have to go find some guys to get some depth?
We'll have the answers, I think, are here. For whatever we need, we'll see how those guys are feeling.
Mike said we need to win for a lot of reasons.
Expand on.
Because it sucks to lose, Gentry.
Trey, ever need to show you anything?
Did you have another thought or no? I'm just curious.
Why? Well,
it fucking sucks. Losing. Awful. That's why I want to win. Because you don't sleep. You want to win for the players that bust their tail. That's it. You know, I mean, it's not about, hey, we'll go into the offseason with a good note. Nobody knows what you did on January 7th or 8th or 6th in April when you come back. But, you know, you want to see, you know, just it all come together and just put four quarters together, you know, win a game like we talked about. You come in here, well, you close game. Yeah, we feel the same way, you know, in that game the other day, you know, we got to put ourselves into a competitive game where it's, you know, back and forth, and there's some field position, and then you score and you take care of the football. And we just hadn't done that. In the opportunities that we had that were like, okay, we fought and we were close. But I think that's why, you know, you just put yourself in a competitive situation, you know, come up with a way to, you know, make a play in the second half to win the game. That's what I hope for. Sorry about my language.
Trey, Avery, can I show you anything besides health in order to get back in the lineup?
I think he's, you know, trying to get healthy, and, you know, the last exposure, you know, wasn't great. So giving, you know, Eric a chance, and SMB came back, and if Trey's healthy, I'm sure he'll help us and be ready to go in some capacity.
When you talk about playing complementary offense, I'm curious, to you, does that always start with establishing the run, or are there other ways to achieve?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can. There's other ways. I mean, we just, you know, make a play down the field that changes field position and creates momentum. Converting third downs, you know, controlling the football. That's always a great way, you know, and then finishing drives with points. You know, that's – and then reserving a right to punt, not putting a ball in harm's way, being able to pin them inside the 10. You know, we've seen examples, not enough of them, to where we do that, and then we force them to punt. You know, we have a good defensive series, force them to punt. You know, now we're on a short field. But those are certainly things that you have to do. And if you can, you know, bust a couple runs in there, you know, to keep them off balance so they're just not, you know, rushing in every play, I think that that does help. And it also, again, I think allows you to create some of those play pass protections that are more favorable to everybody.
Four interceptions this year, more a product of DBs need to make more plays, or the pass rush needs to force more bent throws?
Both, I mean, or tips and passes. You know, I mean, tip passes get picked. So that's something that we always continue to try to emphasize. But it's never going to be about, you know, one specific. And also, you know, we've had our hands on some footballs. Yeah, you gotta make the ones that you're supposed to make. You know, you got to catch the ones you get your hands on. You know, we always say in man coverage, it's not about getting interceptions. It's about not letting your man catch the ball. And then if we're in zone, we have to be able to break and try to make a play on a football. And then obviously the pass rush plays a part in that. You know, I mean, we go back and forth. Is it, you know, not getting there fast enough, or they're throwing it before we're, you know, we get there? And, you know, that's a fine balance of trying to work together to create ball disruption. We always say that, you know, trying to work together.
I know you miss a lot with Jeffrey out, but that was one of the things he seemed to excel at, was getting his hands up.
And we've had some other opportunities. You know, I mean, we've tried, and, you know, guys that have tackled the quarterback, you know, whether the quarterback falls on it, whether Arden hits it out and it, you know, falls and the quarterback recovers it. You know, but you do see a lot of tip balls get intercepted. And that's something that, you know, I think is a fine line and a balance between rushing and then also, you know, seeing that front hand, knowing that you're not there and sliding back into a throwing lane. And when that front hand, you know, comes off, trying to go up and match. You know, we don't want guys that just stand at the line of scrimmage and hop up and down. I don't think that does anything. But also, you know, I think there is something that trying to work into the pocket and, you know, being able to get into those throwing lanes and try to tip a ball. So that helps as well.
Like I said, Sunday, you didn't really know about the injuries and why they've come the way they've come the last 3 years now. I mean, do you think that luck plays into it as much as anything?
I mean, I don't know how it won it. I mean, some of the ones that we've had, you know, I mean, whether that's guy falling on somebody's MCL, you know, or a guy getting dragged down as a gunner and hurting his knee in Colton's instance. And, you know, I just, you know, we don't ever want to put our players in any sort of harm's way. I mean, the injuries that have occurred to the, you know, to the quarterbacks are unfortunate. You know, we know nothing good comes from when the quarterback gets hit. You know, so again, we'll have an opportunity to, you know, at some point in time discuss, you know, all those, and, you know, certainly want to do everything that we can to avoid soft tissue injuries. You know, but I don't know what you know what the answer is sometimes to guys, you know, falling into other people's legs out there on a football field or, you know, hurting something else. So we're going to continue to evaluate that and try to get the guys back as quickly as possible when they do, you know, have an injury.
Don't you think the rest of that is due to level out over time?
I guess it's like analytics. I guess you need a lot of examples, you know, however many examples they use to run the model.
How much did Colton, I guess, improve his rookie year? And maybe what's your message to him as he, I'm assuming, starting to rehab?
Well, he improved, you know, on that special teams. And, you know, when you have a young receiver like that with some size and some speed, you hope that that can translate into the kicking game. I don't think that it did right away. And I think that he worked extremely hard personally. I think Anthony Levine worked extremely hard. And again, anything that a player does is going to be on them. But I know that Levine spent a lot of time teaching Colton how to play special teams and how to be a gunner in this league. And so those were some real positive things. And so, you know, the message is to get healthy and find a role on this football team next year.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. There you go. That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. I think the one thing that stands out to me when he talks about, look, losing sucks. I get it. Losing does suck. What are you going to do about it? What's the plan? What's the plan, Willie?
The plan is you got to get some more draft capital, and they have a lot of money next year against the cap. We've talked about the cap a lot the last couple of years. They didn't have much to spend last summer. They will this summer because Tannehill comes off the books. They've got Byard off the books.
Henry's off the books.
And if Henry comes back, we know the money is going to be a big
reduced
thing. But, you know, the way I look at it, I see Spears, and if you could find either draft or find a budget free agent, you could get solid running tandem for a fraction of the cost that it would take to bring back a 30-year-old Derrick Henry. So I just think, you know, the question about is this maybe the last game, and Mike Vrabel doesn't want to address it now, but it is a very real thing that this could be it. This could be the last game for Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
And I would rather focus on that, honestly, because he deserves, if this is it. I remember Pecorine's last game. We didn't know for a fact that it was Pekka's last game. But the signals he was sending, it made it a very special moment. And so I hope that something like that can happen for Derrick Henry. And even if you don't know, you're better off kind of having that thank you before it's too late.
Yeah.
Before you're like, oh, he'll be back next year. And then all of a sudden he's not back next year.
Yeah.
Because he might be back, but
yeah, you
got to be careful
know
how you do it.
Exactly. You just never know in regards to Derrick Henry. But I'm sure we will, you know, talk about that ad nauseum moving forward. You know, but this, you know, whether it's Derrick Henry, you know, Ryan Tannehill off the books, Kevin Byard off, it doesn't matter. It's, yes, you have all this money. How do you spend it? That's
got to be smart.
Yeah, that is the question that needs to be answered. Yes, you got a bunch of money. Just because I give you a bunch of money doesn't mean you're going to use it wisely.
Yeah. But ask the New York Mets.
Exactly. Yeah. So
they had plenty of money to spend. Salary cap.
You didn't use it wisely.
They did not.
So that's going to be – that's the answer we're waiting for. You know, the question is, yes, you have a lot of it. How then do you use it? Well, we won't know until free agency hits and then ultimately the draft.
And how much does the Titans fan base trust Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon to rebuild this team that has a lot that needs to be rebuilt?
Yeah.
How much do they trust Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel to rebuild the offensive line after what they came into this season with the offensive line looking like?
I've thought about that a lot because my thought is – what they should have been thinking when they changed John Robinson and they brought in Rand Carthon and they sort of doubled down on Mike Vrabel, to me, you should have made that, if you're Amy Adams Strunk, you're making the decision you want those two to do the rebuild. Because if you didn't see that there was a rebuild coming, even at, like I said, all summer long and all season long, whether they went 10-7 or 5-12, which is what they're staring at right now, there's a rebuild coming after this year. They decided to go for it this year, and that was fine, but it just put off the rebuild for another year. The rebuild has to happen this year. It was going to happen either way. So when they hired Rand Carthon, they should have been thinking, this is the guy to do the rebuild, unless you want to have a whole different guy, a different staff after 1 year.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. Or that's not very good foresight. If you were just building, trying to bring him in to resurrect a window for one more year, which didn't work.
The last thing that I want the Titans to do is continue with something that just isn't working.
Yeah.
We played the Michael Lombardi clip earlier in the show. Michael Lombardi said, you know, what I've heard is it's not a great dynamic between those two. I don't know if that's the truth or not. How bad this team is, anything.
But could he
have
just read the Boston Globe thing and said, well, that's what I hear? Does he really know? I like listening to his podcast. He's very good. He gives very strong opinions, but sometimes I wonder, like, where's he getting that?
I think he knows as much as people are willing to tell him. I think that's.
Does he call Mike Vrabel and say, "Is your relationship with Rand Carthon good?" Does he call Rand Carthon and say, "How's it going?"
I'm sure if you call those two, you may not get the answer, the straight answer. But if you call someone that's around both of them, then you're getting more of the straight answer than not.
Right.
And they also publicly here.
Yeah.
We never hear from Rand Carthon, which disappoints me. I think he's a real good personality that would, I think it would help, sell mm-hmm. what they're going to go through if they're kind of out there together and not, we only hear from Mike Vrabel three times a week, get asked the same questions over and over, mm-hmm. and we never hear from Rand Carthon. Like, I'd like to know back and forth, like, how is this working? Like, this is a very important time they're going through. And are they in step? We don't know if we never hear from one of them.
Well, let's continue that.
The people usually don't even ask Mike Vrabel how his relationship with Rand Carthon. Instead of asking about the offensive line, it is obvious they can't block anybody. Mm-hmm. Why 7 or 8 questions about the offensive line? They're terrible.
They're terrible.
And they're going to be terrible Sunday. It's the same guys. It's what you do after Sunday that's going to be the real deal. We've known for weeks they can't block. Mm-hmm. That has ruined their season. And if there's one move that is on them, mm-hmm. for sure, that caused kind of a change reaction, it was the signing of Dillard mm-hmm. and thinking he could play left tackle. Yeah. Because that hasn't worked from the get-go, and all kinds of other problems kind of followed from there. And there was other ones in there, too.
But it has been a massive Achilles heel. I mean, sure. Jason and I were talking about this earlier. If you have a serviceable starting NFL left tackle, the perception of your season could be drastically different. Mm-hmm. If Derrick Henry just had a few more holes, if Will Levis or Ryan Tannehill just had a little bit more time, things could be different. And it was, you pointed out, this offensive line is terrible. There's a lot of needs on this team.
It's paralyzing their whole team.
There's a lot of work that needs to be done in this offseason. And if we can't trust the powers that be that are making those decisions to fix this team is in a much worse position than just what we've seen on the field. But I want to continue that conversation, and I want to get into your phones coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
Talk about the good looks at it. It's kind of, isn't it a little bit like the airport, like the planes are supposed to land safely? And when they do, it's not the thing that you get excited about. It's when there's a crash that it's news. Like, the plays where they block effectively is what they're supposed to do. Do you spend a lot of time on the plays where they block correctly, giving them credit for it, or is it about the ones where they don't?
I think it's a balance. I think you have to continue to show, and I appreciate such a very wordy, long, drawn-out question. There's a balance to coaching and to be able to show the good plays that have shown improvement or things that you worked. I guess the biggest thing is showing everybody or each player or each unit something that you've worked on that you get in the game and you're able to nail it. And you're like, okay, you put time in on it. This is something that we focused on and worked on. And then obviously there's, the technique plays or, the negative plays that we show as well and that we have to try to avoid. That's
Paul Koharski.
Yeah, I mean, did we really need the airplane and thinking about airplanes landing and stuff? Like,
is it awfully graphic?
I think Mike Vrabel understood the question without the, spelling it out. With a reference from the airport.
Yes. Is this offensive line? Is it a fair comparison to call it a plane crash?
I mean,
it's not wrong.
Okay.
I like the analogy. Maybe it was a little bit too long, but I did like the analogy. I mean,
Professor Kuharski.
Yeah. That. What is it? The Columbia.
You did go to Columbia.
Education comes out, man.
The Ivy League. Yeah.
Hey, it comes out.
It's not a plane crash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he's right about that being a wreck. Let's just say that.
It is a wreck.
Yes.
Absolutely, a wreck.
But honestly, the line is going to be very different next year. It has to be. So I'm not really sure.
We said that last year, Willie. We said that last year.
And it was. And it was different. It just wasn't good.
It was worse.
Right. But they had to try, and they failed. It was a crash and burn. Whatever kind of reference you want to insert, it hasn't worked. And the Dillard move was the key. They thought with Dillard and then use the first-round pick on Skowronski, that would – that would get the job done. And then you move over one spot, then it's Brewer. Could he be a center?
No.
No, he hasn't been able to do it. And then, you know, it's kind of a chain reaction from there. Petit Frere gets the gambling thing. We were sitting right here when we found out that that happened. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that was a problem that was kind of out of Vrabel and Carthon's control at that point. So it was just a nightmare. They've had a nightmare with what happened, and they're going to have to start over almost from scratch this coming year. Regardless of what it looks like with the planes and the airplanes landing, let's put it this way. Let's say they look surprisingly good against Jacksonville and they win. That could happen. Mm-hmm. Like, crazy things happen in this league every week, and you never know. If they play great, they still have to revamp the whole offensive line.
Oh, yes,
so I don't know why we're fixated on, you know, this particular way you're coaching, blocking, or looking at tape. It's a moot point. They got to move on from these guys. They're not good enough.
They just can't afford to be wrong again.
No.
They were wrong on Dillard, and they were wrong on Aaron Brewer, and that has been the biggest Achilles heel for this team. They cannot afford to be wrong again. So that kind of goes back to my major question of how much does the fan base really trust Vrabel and Rand Carthon to rebuild this offensive line, to rebuild essentially the depth at every single position on this football team? If that's what they did with the O-line, I don't blame anyone if they don't trust Rand Carthon or Mike Vrabel to fix things. Frankly, I don't know how much I trust Rand Carthon or Mike Vrabel to fix things and to revamp the offensive line and to give a breath of fresh air into this team that needs it desperately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even though this team will have, you know, a lot or a hefty amount of monies to deal with, I mean, the monies at their disposal for free agency. Like you said, Caroline, do the fan base trust that they will get it right? If they're, you know, looking at what happened last offseason, then it's like, the trust level is very low. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, to me, it's, does the narrative outside of Nashville change? If it doesn't change and it continues to be what it is, I think people will trust that this team will, again, like last year, you can't get any worse. Mm-hmm. Well, they did. But they do trust possibly that they will go out there and this time address and spend the money. The excuse last year probably was we didn't have enough money. We couldn't go and get, you know, the players.
Because they decided they wanted to keep Tannehill.
They wanted to keep Derrick Henry. They wanted to keep Byard. Yeah, so they didn't have the money at their disposal, so they tell us to go out and get him.
And that's an excuse.
It's an excuse.
But they didn't want to roll the credit card bill down the hill again and have it push the bill. Because at some point, the bill does become due. What they did, doing it this way, does open up a lot more flexibility within the cap now to go get whatever it is that you can get. Now, we know that when you go free agency shopping, great players aren't always there, right? You got to make really smart choices, even if you're willing to overpay for the best guy, Bud Dupree.
Yeah.
That doesn't always solve the problem, right?
You can't throw money at your problems.
Jadeveon
Clowney?
But if you don't want to throw
Julio Jones?
Get Andre Dillard.
Exactly. When you don't want to throw. Well, I mean, they paid Andre Dillard some money now for a non-starter. You got to understand, they paid him $10 million for this season for a guy that wasn't starting.
Yeah.
That should have been more like, I give you $3 million per year, you know, not $10 million.
That should have been more like, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to go find a guy that can start
left tackle. It could have been that too, but I just think, you know, I'm not going to say fans don't trust that they get it right this time, but they are a little bit apprehensive. It's like, I think the fan base is like wait and see mode. Like, we'll wait and see. We ain't going to just totally discard, you know, this organization or, you know, the coaching staff or the GM. You know, it's his first – I think this is his first real offseason to evaluate. He's evaluated all season. You come into the offseason, you know exactly what you want, people you've pinpointed on your board in your big boardroom. So I think the fan base – and I could be completely wrong, but I think the fan base is sort of like cautiously – like we just want to wait and see what they do first before – we sort of jumped back in and started spending money on watching this team every Sunday or Monday or Thursday that they play.
How do you feel about it?
I, you know what? I just like I would give any, you know, college coach, let him have his recruiting class to get this thing straight, especially if it hadn't completely fall off the, you know, track. I'm the same way with the combination of Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel. Let this next offseason, I will make more of a determination after this offseason, you know, whether this is a good marriage or not. Because I think they both, they've had time to evaluate this roster together. Mm-hmm. You go into the offseason knowing exactly what you need. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You need running back. You need offensive linemen. You need another receiver. You need secondary guys. There are enough areas that need to be filled where you shouldn't get this wrong. You shouldn't. Because every –
can't afford to get it wrong.
Like, if you can't get your guy – say if you need an offensive lineman, and let's say just – let's say out of, you know, just blue, for some reason those first two top or three top tackles are gone. For whatever reason, they're gone. Then you got so many other spots that need to be filled. You should be able to pick a guy and plug him in, and he – play right away, because you need guys to play right away. That's what you need.
I think that is an important point, that this may not be a rebuild that you could fix all the problems
exactly.
in one offseason, mm-hmm. even with extra cap space and a higher first-round draft pick.
Because you just don't want to be giving out contracts all willy-nilly.
Right.
Just to fill spaces.
Right. Oh, and we have seen countless teams, not mm-hmm. just the Titans, but you know the Jets, I think, were famous for this, just throwing money. Mm-hmm. You lose more than you win on that. Or just going out and overpaying whoever the free agents
exactly.
are to put a Band-Aid on some stuff. That's not the smartest way to do it. You have to think, look, this may take a couple years. Let's be smart. That's why I wonder with what are they going to have, the sixth or seventh pick somewhere in there?
They'll have a top eight pick.
Right. Yeah. It comes back to something that you guys already hit in the first hour. To me, this is not a year where you go into the draft looking at a quarterback. Like, I think Levis, for sure, has to be penciled in and say he is the guy for now. Mm-hmm. Let's give him a chance. He's shown enough. That simplifies your draft strategy, right? Now at six, you could find a team that's desperate for a quarterback, mm-hmm. that's willing to give you extra stuff to move down a couple of spots. That's what the Titans really need, right?
I know, like, you're right, yeah. They don't need a quarterback. They need
X, Y, Z.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of needs. You know, and maybe it's you feel like Harrison or somebody like that is mm-hmm. worth going up and get. That's what they need to be able to do, is maximize the opportunity in the draft, I think.
I don't want to hear excuses this offseason mm-hmm. of, well, we don't have enough money. Well, you know, you got a bunch of salaries off the books, or we don't have enough draft capital. Well, you have a top eight pick. Mm-hmm. A top eight pick in the NFL draft should be a franchise-altering kind of player.
Well,
I don't want to hear.
How often is it, though? 50%, maybe?
Yeah, but you better try.
I mean,
you got to try. That's what your attitude.
Go, yeah,
Corey Davis,
yeah.
Like, there's a lot of levels, right? There's Corey Davis, was a nice player.
Yeah, but
there's
he wasn't
total
a franchise
bust,
guy.
Right? Yeah. And then there are a few franchise players,
you
right?
You can't afford to draft a bust, not with all the needs
on this
team. You need a franchise.
I'm trying to think about
player.
What's realistic for this team next year. And right now, I'm not sitting there going, they can fix it all and
they
can be really good next year. I don't think so. Not realistically.
They can fix some areas on this team, but –
I think it's more of a 2 to 3 year project. Honestly.
It will take like a lightning in a bottle situation where you know, for whatever reason, you get your guys in the offseason, it just works during the season. So
there's just no excuse to not be better.
Yeah,
we talked about that with the offensive line. I didn't expect this offensive line to be the best offensive line in the NFL. I didn't expect this team to be a Super Bowl contending team. I didn't expect the offensive line to be that bad.
No,
I don't expect this team to be contending for a Super Bowl next year, but I expect this team to be better. Mm-hmm. Let's get right into your phones on this coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Mitch Light covers college football for The Athletic. We'll join us in 15 minutes. We'll break down the college football playoff games we saw yesterday. Nico Iamaleava's debut with the Tennessee Vols. We'll get into that with Mitch Light in 15 minutes. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios. Keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Visit springhillac.com. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays for live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena, because the Predators are in action tonight hosting the Chicago Blackhawks. So just breaking down what comes next for the Tennessee Titans. My question is, I don't know how much the fan base really trusts Ryan Carthon and Mike Vrabel to address all of the, adequately address all of the needs of this team in the offseason. But I want to get your thoughts on that. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. My man, Chris Titans and Truth is on the line. What's up, Chris?
Good afternoon. Happy New Year to everybody. Everybody. I hope everything goes good. And here's a few comments that I have to start off the year. If you're willing to trust Mike Vrabel after all of this, you're delusional. And this is why I say that. 5-18, maybe about to be 5-19 in 24 games. 12-21 right now in 22 and 23 combined. So in any other organization, the coach is either fired or about to get fired. And this, you know, where y'all were talking about, you know, cars, you talk about an airplane crash, I think of it more like the Titanic. Like, the ship is sinking.
Iceberg collision.
Yeah.
Very similar kind of end result, right? Not good.
Not good. And it's like, and it seems that Mike Vrabel, he is willing to go down with the ship. He is like, he's not giving up without a fight, because you could tell. But, I mean, the fact is, I just don't, if Vrabel is back this year, how can you be excited about next season, no matter what Rand does in the offseason? He can have a great offseason, a perfect draft. I trust that Mike Vrabel will find a way to mess this up. Because if you keep Vrabel, what makes you think next year is going to be any different than this year? It's going to be, we're going to have this exact same conversation next year. And Caroline,
let's pretend that you are Amy Adams drunk. What are you doing this offseason?
Mike Vrabel's gone immediately. He's gone. If you can't get a trade, he's gone. I'm getting a more offensive-minded head coach, somebody that can build this offense around Will Levis. Around Will Levis, what he can do. We see what Bobby Slowick did with C.J. Stroud. He called an almost perfect game. He put their players in the best position to succeed. Vrabel has put his team in the best position to fail. And we've seen that consistently. And even with that offensive line, and we have the worst. And, I mean, we've seen it in 2021. Yes, you got guys off the street. And, yeah, you had a couple more talented players, but we were able to win despite the injuries, despite having to get guys off the street. This year, basically, Vrabel is like Peter Laviolette. You've reached the ceiling. So why postpone the inevitable? Get a jump now, and you don't want it to be, as you say, Caroline, a year too late. Because Will Levis only has 4 years. So this is year one. Going into year two, if you get a new coach, you at least get 2 full seasons before you really got to make a decision on an extension, because Levis is going to get a lot of money.
Yeah,
but if you
points, Chris,
go with Vrabel.
Chris, appreciate your phone call. Your phone call. All very fair points. Happy New Year to you. We'll chat with you soon.
Speaking of Slowick, I'm not advocating for because I think there's some truth into what he was saying. I'm not advocating for Vrabel to be fired, but Slowick will have a head coaching job next year.
Probably.
On somebody's team. He's more of an offensive mind. But the problem you run into if you do indeed, say if you fire Vrabel, well, you got to fire the offensive coordinator too, because if you bring in a guy like Slowick, he's going to be the guy that's calling the plays. He's going to bring his own guys in. So you're talking about possibly a overhaul of every coach on the offensive side of the ball. I'm not prescribing to that. I'm not. But if she chooses to do it, then it's her team. Go and do it. But there's going to be a lot of questions to answer, not only with just the roster, but with the coaching staff in general. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even talking, I'm not pinpointing like Vrabel, but I'm talking about the guys underneath Vrabel as well.
I get the point about Laviolette is a good point. There are good coaches that cycle through at a particular spot, are good coaches, and then go to another spot and start a new cycle and do really well. But it was the right move at the right time to move on. That is something that is true, I think, in every sport. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really the essential point with Vrabel, because Rand Carthon just got there. Unless you just think you just made a terrible mistake, which I don't think is the case, then Rand Carthon is going to be there. And then the question would be, does he hire a new coach? But Vrabel kind of had a big hand in bringing him in. So I kind of feel like they were tasked to go through what was going to happen anyway. That's my point. If you don't think of anything else I said, remember this. They should have known when they fired John Robinson that the roster was going to have to turn over pretty heavily at the end of this year, whether they went 5-12 or 12-5. Mm-hmm. So they should have known right then when they hired Rand Carthon, this is the guy, along with Mike Vrabel, that are going to see this team through the transition and on into new quarterback, new stadium, all of the above. But I do get the Laviolette part. So that to me, and this is a question I've asked weeks ago when they were struggling, does Mike Vrabel want to go through the transition, the rebuild that it's going to take? It's not going to be easy. It's a tall order. So when you say, do you trust these guys?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whoever it is, it's a tall order. It won't be easy to fix. Not in one offseason. They are low on talent.
And it fixed in one offseason, I think, is tricky. Can you get better in an offseason? Can you address the
need? Can you have the team moving in the right direction?
That's in the right direction. I don't need you to be in the Super Bowl next year.
That would have been what you hope for the Colts or the Texans this year, right? Let's see if we can move it in the right direction. And they've gone well beyond that, right? They've exceeded expectations, like, wow, almost to the point where the expectations might be too high next year for both of those teams.
Yeah.
Like, because they've been surprisingly good.
But to any fan out there that doesn't trust Vrabel, like we just heard from Chris, I don't blame you. I don't blame fan. If they want to run Vrabel out of there, if they want Ran out of there, if they don't trust them, if they're lethargic, if they don't want to buy tickets, I get it. Because that's how bad this team is. That's how bad this product has been. So I'm not going to blame anybody for feeling however they might feel about this team. All right, coming up next, we'll chat with Mitch Light. He covers college football for The Athletic. We had some wild bowl games yesterday. We'll look
ahead. Great games. Wow.
Two great games. All-timers. We also saw the first of Nico Amelioff as a starter in a Tennessee uniform. We'll get Mitch's evaluation on that, and we'll do that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.